Welcome to Platinum Property Training's podcast, where we will be talking about business, money, and let's not forget the economy, real estate, and bringing in real inspirations. These are people that are doing some great things in our world. Like, share, add this to your playlist, and subscribe. Keep track of our updates. Okay, you beautiful people, sit back, relax, let's listen, and let's get down to business. All right, so welcome back to Platinum's Properties podcast. And tonight, we have a very, very special guest, an entrepreneur, great person, Platinum member. Lauren, you're very, very welcome, Platinum Property Training.
Thank you so much, Paul. It's great to be here.
Lovely stuff. So what we're going to try and do is we're going to try and dig into a little bit about you, a little bit about your life, a little bit where you're planning on going in the world of business. And then we'll kick in about promotional, your business. So a little bit about yourself, where you've come from, what you do.
Cool. Yeah, great. Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here. And great to be in the fabulous studios. I did a lot of training online with you, so it's really nice to be here. My name's Lauren. I'm a pharmacist by trade. And I run a startup company with my co-founder Badami, who's also a member of the Platinum Group. And we have a startup called Promotion Rewards. So our business is consumer rewards. We wanted people to feel, you know, that as a consumer, they had a voice. So we reward you for your shopping wherever you go and help brands that you see in supermarkets and pharmacies to better understand who you are as a shopper based on what you buy and deliver you real value. So through offers that you then redeem post-purchase with the scan of your receipt. So we just wanted to make the shopping journey really easy for shoppers and to help brands really understand who the customer was when they're distributed across so many different channels. Bit of an obscure, I suppose, path from pharmacy to startup technology. So we're actually both pharmacists. So that's a bit of a journey that we've been on. We were both studying in Trinity College, and throughout the pandemic, we engaged in a program that they ran there for student entrepreneurs called Launchbox in Trinity. Had a really bad idea. It won the competition. Exactly.
How we built this studio.
Exactly. So, I think maybe because we were a good team, we won the competition. But that's what started us really getting the bug for what it would be like to start your own business, to create something from scratch and see it through, and go through the process of scrapping designs and scrapping ideas, and just got really, really hooked on that. It was also really hard to be in healthcare during a pandemic, so that motivated us, I suppose, a little bit to do something different. That's where that started. But I suppose I always had an interest in entrepreneurship. It's kind of in my family. Like my dad's an entrepreneur. My granddad started a business, which my dad's now managing director of. So it was always something that I wanted to.
So there's a history of business in your family.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Again, like when we talk about business, I absolutely love and adore companies.
Yeah.
I just love business. I'm probably one of them people that you or Badami might subscribe drugs to calm down and like give him a little bit more of that. But that's all I do. So yeah. I love it. So I think the world of entrepreneurship definitely can be scary.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel coming from the path you were on, like getting a good wage, then to the world of business.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a big fright? Did you get a big shock?
It's like I suppose, especially from my parents' perspective, I'd studied 5 years to be, you know, with pharmacy in particular, it's a very clear path. You study for 5 years, you become a pharmacist, you do dentistry, you study for 5 years, become a dentist, you know. So it's a very straight and narrow path that you would, you know, I suppose, be expected to go on. And so to make the decision to forego what would be a good salary coming straight out of college in favor of pursuing something that you think can grow. It is definitely scary. The thing that I suppose softened it a little bit for us was the fact that with pharmacy, we could work as we could be self-employed. So We worked as contractors. Basically, if you're a locum pharmacist, it basically just means you book your shifts through an app. So we used to work weekends, say 24 hours Saturday and Sunday, and then
keep some cash flow coming in.
Exactly, yeah. Just income. And then obviously we didn't have any money from the company, we were still building everything.
You better get used to that.
Yeah, exactly. Story of my life lately. But that's what kind of fund that, because we could do that on the weekends, it meant that we didn't have to give, I suppose, equity away so that we could pay ourselves, if that makes sense. Yeah. We didn't raise investment just to pay ourselves a salary. We waited until we had at least a minimal viable product before we went out to angel investors, because we could self-fund by working 7 days a week.
Yeah, well, that's so in the world of business as well, and you say, you know, people say, oh, pay yourself first. I told you backstage earlier on that I still haven't taken a wage out of companies I owned. It's not to say I don't take expenses.
Yeah.
I haven't taken a wage.
Yeah.
Because it's not there. Like, it physically wasn't there. So that's where I'm trying to say, when you, I've been in business since I'm a kid. So I went straight from my plumbing and straight into business.
Wow. Yeah.
So when you took that leap of jumping, say, from a good wage coming in, loads of time in college, like, who gave you the idea of saying, right, let's pull this together and go like big, because it's quite big what you've done.
Yeah.
And how on a path of like scariness, how scared were you doing it?
I think I don't want to sound bad saying this, but I think because we had had such, like, I think both of us had an awakening during our, we had 8 month placement coming, finishing up our 5 year degree. And it was really, really hard for me, I think, to coming, I think, especially from a family where there was entrepreneurship. I had worked in the family business during my summers, like yourself, as a kid, like a teenager. Like, and if you wanted to change something, you could make your voice heard and say, like, I think you could do this system better, you could file that better, or like whatever, and the change would be made. Whereas I found in like a really big corporate environment that you would often be disappointing the customer in front of you in favor of short-term gain, but not valuing the long-term custom. So
yeah.
I found that really hard, like, and really unintuitive sometimes to not be able to affect change, but also to have kind of unrealistic short-term targets without having the longer term picture. So I think knowing that I could, I just had to create something that I felt was the epitome of growth and scale, and I think that's why even in the startup world, a lot of businesses are business to business, where they sell from one business to another business, and we went into the we do sell business to business, but a huge element of what we do is business to consumer, so the masses basically.
Yeah.
We need a lot of people to use our app in order to create value for brands. So that's a scary thing in itself, but I think that's what we both wanted to do, was we want to create value for the masses and also help businesses. So I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We definitely did.
Yeah.
So again, what the hell is it?
Yeah.
sorry now, because I'm coming from a rough and tumbly world and I'm completely lost to what it actually is, and and how could someone like me, stupid that I can't use computers, or like I know you were showing me earlier on, you screenshot a receipt and you get points and stuff like that, but say someone like that, sounds really simple to do.
So yeah,
what actually is it, and where did you come up with the name for it? And
So it's a mobile app, and it was actually number 3 in the App Store recently, in the free apps. So it's called Promotion Rewards, and it basically, you download the app, you take a photo of any shopping receipt that you have from any store, it doesn't matter where it's from or what you bought, and you get points for doing that every single time. And then when you engage with any of our partner brands, so we work with like Unilever, Dr. Oetker, Clarins, we have really great partners out there. We've worked with Guaranteed Irish recently, promoting Guaranteed Irish products, and basically rewarding people for buying their products regardless of where they bought them. and also reaching people based on their buying behaviors. So because we have a better understanding of you as a shopper through your shopping receipts, we can deliver value to you then from the brands that we know you'll love. So
okay.
Yeah. So when you submit a shopping receipt, we're like, okay, you're voting in favor of seeing offers from this cosmetics brand because we know that you love this type of product. So it's basically personalizing your offers and rewards. And with the points that you build up, then you can get a range of different gift cards. So for Amazon and Pennies and Nando's and charity donations, you can do what you want with the points. So
put something back in people's pockets.
People's pocket. Yeah, exactly, Paul. Yeah.
And like, if you're looking in, then like obviously you've built up a database of customers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd imagine then you've got a massive amount of receipts gone somewhere. Yeah. I don't know where. I'm trying to look. Someone says the cloud. I'm looking for the fucking cloud. how do you manage all, like, so again, I'm just trying to think out loud here. I take a receipt, I scan it.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me, yeah, you're at the getting 25 points, or whatever it is. Your makeup is £3 off, or whatever it is. You've got rewarded for it.
Exactly.
How do you store all that? Or where is all them? Do you physically have to scan receipts and upload them? And
so thankfully, technology is at a level where it can convert an image into legible information. So, our technology allows us to convert your picture into information. You know, that's digitized and anonymized and accessible on our end in terms of understanding the trends and what people are buying. And that's what helps us to allow brands to target people based on their buying behaviors the same way they would as an online business. You know, you get advertisements and you know it's based on your buying behaviors, but you know, to allow offline brands to really reach the right people as well. So in terms of the data, it's in the cloud and it's secure and everything. But it's digitized and all of our technology allows it to be processed pretty much automatically. We do some human verification just because there are people who like to upload things that aren't receipts, and as you can imagine, with anything at scale, like we've 50,000 people using the app now, so at anything at scale you get some interesting behaviors as well. So we have some human elements just for auditing purposes as well, and to make sure everything's above board.
So if you have 50,000 up using the app now, mm-hmm. And there we're I think what do you have, about 6 million in this country?
Something
like that. So where's all the rest of these people that shop? Like, have you done research to see how many people shop on a weekly basis? Obviously, there's a lot of kids involved here as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's you still have a massive runway there.
Yeah,
to scale.
Absolutely, we still haven't hit critical mass in Ireland for sure.
Right.
But thankfully, we're now at a level where people have heard of us. So we work with a lot of we call them nano influencers. So people with anything from like say 3,000 to about 10,000 followers to promote our app and share that they can refer their friends and so on. And we used to reach out and they'd be like, what is this? Is this a scam? You know, like free points or free rewards. But now when we reach out or they reach out to us, they've already heard of us. So to us, that's a marker of that, you know, we're out there. But as you said, there's a long way to go and there's a lot more we can do in Ireland. To grow from that 50,000 to get more households and more people.
So have you got like sort of a number based on that? Do you say like, well, we've targeted 200,000 or?
Yeah, like for us. Yeah.
Or sorry, what would even 200,000 look for you? Like say currently you're around 50,000 now.
Yeah.
What would 200,000 look for you to scale? Is that more teams, more people?
Yeah, like with the team that we have now and with the technology that we have, thankfully we're able to scale pretty easily. Now we have all the infrastructure in place. So going from 50,000 to 200,000 wouldn't be, wouldn't be a hurdle for us. It would be, you know, it's a natural progression now. Initially when we went from say, 1,000 to maybe 5,000, we was all systems, you know, go, and we had to adapt. Thankfully, it was always fine on the side of the user, but we had to adapt our infrastructure and our storage and everything else to handle the volume that we were seeing. But no, we would be ready to scale, and you know, we want to go to the UK. So of course we would expand our team to make sure that we're giving the best customer service to our shoppers and to our brands as well. But in terms of our infrastructure, it's really strong and really robust.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then, who is collecting all these rewards? Is it men or women?
Oh yeah. Good question. Yeah. We have about 80% women on our platform, which is representative of how budgets are managed in households, statistically speaking. Women have 80% influence on how the household budget is spent. That's just a statistic that's out there. So we're glad that, I suppose, our platform represents, you know, the voice of the who is managing that budget out there, and particularly for our brands, that they can reach the right audience. So that's who it's appealed to so far.
Okay, so you've got customer, mm-hmm. and then you've got yourselves controlling it all, mm-hmm. and then, like, you're hearing you say the brands.
Yes.
So is that where sort of you get paid? How eventually is this going to make truckloads of revenue for you? Like,
yeah, so our brand partners that we work with, basically when you engage with their offers, we only win when our brands and our shoppers are winning. So we don't make money unless you are getting rewards, basically. So we take commission on any sales driven by our platform for that brand. So we're only spending budget, and we're only making money if people are engaging with the brands, which makes it really important for us that we're bringing the right offers to the right people, because obviously you're more likely to be interested, and the brand is more likely to get somebody who won't just buy this time, but hopefully they'll actually like your product and buy next time. And we can track that over time, that you bought this month on the offer, but then you also bought next month when it wasn't on the app in an offer as well. So
you try and control that whole, like, algorithm down to, it's like marketing. And I suppose I'm just trying to jump into the world of property for a second, because that's the only one I know. But I mean, we try and target a certain people, so we have to constantly, or else your money's wasted on marketing.
Absolutely.
It's quite difficult to do.
Yeah.
So how in a company like that, or a company that you have set up, how do you allow budgets in for marketing? How do you allow budgets for, I mean, it's not just you and Bidemi, there's obviously another team behind this as well.
Yeah.
What does that look like internally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so marketing was actually our first hire once we raised investment, because it was so important that we had a base of customers using the app. We needed to put ourselves out there and starting from zero, as you know, like trying to get your name, your brand out there, and that it could be something people trust is really important in your industry as it is in ours. So we had to invest in putting ourselves out there. We basically had a target cost of acquiring a new user on the app. Now 40% of our new users come from referrals. So me getting you to download the app and using my code, and then you get points for doing that. So and so do I. So our referral program has amplified that. But in the first instance, we had to just rely on social media. And our influencers as well has added a lot of weight to it. So people actually trust that.
Now, what is an always hear this word influencer. What exactly is that, and what do you try and target for there?
Mm-hmm. So we want people to talk about the app who look like the people that use our app. So as you brought up, that 80% of the people using our app are women. It naturally appeals to women. And those are the people who are most important in terms of being the decision maker within the household, shopping and the budget and everything, as we know statistically. So we want the people promoting the app to represent those people, and so that they can be like, oh, that person looks like me, and, you know, I shop a lot, or I'm always doing groceries or whatever. So that was important for us. And in the first place, it was just us promoting it. But, you know, like, there's only
so many, I know the pain there.
There's only so many times people can see your own face. And we obviously have other things to do in the business too than be dancing around for TikTok. So, the marketing has been getting lots of people with say a small following or to promote the app, and then we promote that content then further, so that people can see the types of people that use our app. So
yeah,
that runs really well. And now we find actually people make their own content unprovoked or unsolicited, if you like, just because they have a referral code. And if people download using their referral code,
they get more
points. So we're not commissioning those posts at all. So to us, that's the definition of virality, is people talking about what you're doing without you asking them to, So
yeah. And in a good way.
In a good way, yeah. Yeah. God, yeah.
That is the thing with companies, several different companies. But again, you're branding in the company. You may allow someone else to come in.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if their branding is slightly different than you, you're like, hold on a minute. This is what I want. This is what you want. And I mean, that's in your space too. I'm sure it's the same. It's like protecting one of your kids at some time. And you have to really, if you're 100% behind your business, which you should be, you will lose a limb for it. So, I mean, it takes up a lot of headspace, takes up a lot of time.
Yeah.
It's a lot of mindset fights with yourself.
Yeah.
But you have to protect it. So again, then, if we head into the space of someone getting these points, what does that actually look like? And let's say Tara buys makeup, because I know she does.
Yeah.
These little boxes come to the house and they're scattered really quick. Her and Sarah disperse them, and there's like a big Wi-Fi. And I'm like, what the hell's in that box? Now I know how much that little tube of shit is, and it might look, might make your.
Not a tube. Sure.
But there's some coinage in that for you and for her back in return.
Yeah.
So let's just say, I'm just trying to get my head around this again.
Sure.
Let's just say I buy €100 worth of makeup every single month.
Yeah.
You've now realized that I like Kiehl's, is it?
Clarence, yeah.
Clarence,
yeah,
yeah. That, yeah.
Yeah.
And you send me more of that stuff, and I'm like, well, I'm going to have another €50 this month.
Yeah.
And I'm spending like 150 quid a month, which I think probably someone on makeup or whatever it is could spend very easily.
Mm-hmm.
What would that look like back for me? So say tonight I wasn't using your app.
Yeah.
And now I downloaded it. I mean, what would incentivize me to do it? Is it like £3, £5? How does that look for me?
Yeah, so usually we give you a percentage back as points. So if you're buying, say, a €50 makeup product, or whether it's a €5 deodorant, say if you get 10% back as points, to you, that value goes back into your in-app wallet. And once you've clocked up points worth, say if you have 5,000 points, that you could spend that on a gift card. I know, for example, Pennies, say you could get a €5 gift card with 5,000 points. So then you can go to Pennies and get something for free, or to Nando's and get your, a meal with your kid for free or whatever. So for us, it's putting money back into people's pockets, and they choose the reward that they want. And we have like a lot of different rewards available for people. So it's up to the consumer how they
spend. So say I get 20 quid back.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I still get to use that receipt again if I buy the same stuff?
No, yeah. You'll get removed. Okay.
That's me gone.
Thank you.
There's no money to be made out of me.
People do it accidentally. But no, our system does flag that as it can identify the identical receipt. But which is important, actually, for we have to think of all about that. And that was important when we were raising investment, that, things couldn't be falsified and that we would be able to detect fraudulent behavior. And it's very important for our brands that their budget's being spent accurately. So we have, for any offers, we have human verification to make sure that everything's
above board.
Now,
so again, you're in an app business, you're on the online business. We all know about online stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I mean, if these scammers would put enough of their effort and time into actually doing a day's work, they would be multimillionaires.
Absolutely.
So how do you protect yourself from an online space world? Like, I mean, we got targeted last year, I think it was, where we really, every day we woke up, there was just more shit coming in. And I was like, just shut the whole thing down, start again. Okay. We're obviously missing something. Okay. But obviously you can't do that in your space, because I'm talking about, maybe we someone linked onto an email, or I don't even know what they do, but it was shut a lot of our shit down.
Okay.
So what do you do? And it was right in the middle of a sale, which is very important to the company to keep the lights on.
Okay.
So what do you do in that space to try and protect yourselves? Did you just have to go off and get educated in that space?
Yeah.
Or
Yeah, thankfully our development team is very strong in, like, you know, security, and that obviously with managing people's data, that everything is locked tight, secure. So we use only the best infrastructure in terms of cloud storage, and all of our data will be like anonymized.
Yeah.
Separate from the person. So yeah, all of that was massively important to us in terms of handling people's data. So Damien is our technical lead, so he can speak more to that.
I'm going to ask him what he actually does. I thought he'd come booting the door in there tonight. I'm going to have to do part two with Bademi. Get all them secrets out of him.
Oh, he's a very interesting story, definitely.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. So he heads up all of our technology. So that was a huge part of his job, was making sure that everything was secure and that we used all the best. We pay for, you know, a premium to use the best cloud storage, yeah, and all of that out there. So
that protects that, yeah, side of things. Yeah. And have you had any frightening?
No frights, thankfully. Yeah. We get people trying their hand at uploading, you know, like that they wrote down.
That would be me.
The entrepreneur. We've enterprising people who try things, but it's always flagged, and it like, you know, if they try it more than once, they do get deactivated. Like, you know, we just can't, as a business, we can't tolerate people. You know, we are offering a really valuable reward solution to people who want to use it, and it's really easy to fail of in a genuine way, so there's absolutely no reason to try and falsify anything. But like, you know, we have rules in terms of, like, you can upload a maximum number of receipts per month, like, as in,
just keep finding them.
Yeah, like, what's reasonable for a person to have bought within a month. So we've lots of systems in place, and we had to learn as we went on, you know.
So it's fantastic. Now I'm actually getting to understand it a little bit better. So what is your daily role? Like, again, sorry, I'm going to just keep going. You know the way I am. You trained me loads of times, so I'll just jump into my mindset. Don't mind me for a sec. But, like, we come in here and there's madness. Is there madness when you wake up in the morning? And like, I presume Christmas time and all, it's just madness with receipts. And what's your day look like?
We have had mad days where things on the back end were slow, as in the processing of data, for example, was affected by, you know, something technological. Like I said, when we were in the beginning days, going from 1,000 to 5,000, we don't get those anymore. But when, like, we were having a really hard time in the back end, but thankfully nothing shut down for the users. They had no idea. But everything was on fire for us. So you know, there've been times like that, and that's natural when you're getting used to a new technology and so forth. So thankfully that's all ironed out now. There's always something. I'm operations, so what I do on a day-to-day basis can vary from marketing to you know, finance to everything in between, and, you know, coming up with what's next in terms of what we can offer to the brand. So obviously a lot of commercial stuff I work with directly with a lot of the brands that we have on the platform now. So yeah, it could be anything from sales to finance to marketing.
A bit of everything has to be taken into play. That's fantastic. Now we're probably going to push into the world that I love, and it's finance.
Yeah.
Money. Yeah. There's no point in us not talking about it here. No. Actually, you know, I'm sure by the sounds of things, by the sounds of where you're going with this thing, and there's been a lot of money raised in our group.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably if you tap into the English market,
mm-hmm,
says, let's say Ireland's under control, and you decide to go, okay, we're now going to try the English market.
Yeah.
How are you going to do that in terms of finance? Do you have to go off and raise capital, or do you have to do it? Actually, bring me back to the start of how you did raise, or if you did raise.
Yeah. So when we were working our 7 days a week, we managed to build enough to pitch ourselves to angel investors. So we raised an early round, about 65 grand, when we just had that minimal viable product, and obviously weren't taking salary or anything from the company. So that helped us to build that into something that we could then get a small number of people using, so that we would have data to then pitch to venture capital investors here in Ireland. So that's what we were doing in 2021. I also got a bit of grant funding. I did the New Frontiers program. You're supposed to use that stipend to pay yourself so that you're out of full-time work. We just put it into
the app. Beast.
Yeah, the beast. So and local enterprise as well. We got a little bit of feasibility study funding as well, which is really helpful at the time. So we just got funding from wherever we could get it so that we could build the initial product. And then come 2022, then we were ready to go out and raise our pre-seed round, which was we were aiming for 700,000. So
Jesus Christ.
In the end we raised 725. So that was through venture capital investors and Enterprise Ireland.
That's some serious work.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I know how frightening it is to raise money, and that's another scary knife for you. So when we're raising money in the world of property, it's sort of rates, and you'd have an interest rate, you'd have a time. How does it look like in your world? Because I can't imagine these, like, your business isn't going to grow, how am I trying to put this? Your business needs time.
Yeah.
It just needs time, but it's massively scalable. Mm-hmm. Whereas, say, in the property world, you buy a house, you fix it, you pay back your investor, everyone's done within 12-month period.
Yeah.
What does it look like for you? Or what does a good investor look like for you?
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Because when we were raising, it was important to us. That initial round, a lot of people call that friends, family, fools.
Yeah, anyone that listened to you.
That round. But we actually were fortunate in the sense that we got connected kind of in a through the startup network that we're part of in Dogpatch Labs. We were in a co-working space there, and we just kind of randomly got connected to a couple of industry experts, I suppose, who weren't necessarily angel investors at the time, but they one of them was, but the rest of them were just really kind of doing really well in their sector. So in like advertising, media, they knew about consumer goods brands, and they knew what it was that you know that they're looking for. And they thought we had something really promising. So so that allowed us to raise money from that kind of small amount of money first. And sorry, am I answering your question?
Yeah.
So the funding journey.
So say the big chunk that you raised to get up going.
Yeah.
How does that look like for an investor in that type of space? Mm-hmm. Is that like, I don't know, like is it in 6 years, like 5 years, you get they get repaid, or are they simply looking at the two entrepreneurs and going, okay, I want these on my portfolio, I want these on my book? Like, what way does it work in that space?
With really early stage investors, I think the team is really important.
Yeah.
And that's what we've learned, and that's what we've been told. And it was all new to us as well at the start. So, you know, being able to see what these entrepreneurs are like, what credibility they have, and I think people really, really backed us as a team. Like we were in college together, so we knew each other for a really long time, and had been working on the company for the guts of 2 years before we went out to try. And so we knew everything that we, any question that any investor could have asked us about the industry, we knew the answer. You know, so we mightn't have solved it yet, but we knew how we could and would solve it.
And did they really push, like, do these type of investors like really like in same again in the property world, they'll grill you, and they're giving you money at the end of the day, and that's usually their families or their, you know, maybe their investments money. So in that world again, did they really grill you in the boardroom setting?
No, definitely. Like we would have prepared like a presentation including everything about like you know, everything from what we saw as being the problem in the industry, you know, that brands couldn't connect directly to their customer when they're selling through all these different channels. You know, the size of the market that we were gonna tackle, how much money we could make. All we had done financial projections, everything like really thoroughly. And going through some of those programs, like the government ones, the New Frontiers and so forth, was actually really, really helpful.
some fantastic people involved in there too.
Yeah, and they grill you in the program. So yeah, fantastic people is right, definitely. They grill you. So you every 2 months you basically have a boardroom where they absolutely tear your business apart in the best way possible. And like you leave the room shook, or the online room at the time it was because of the pandemic. But yeah, you leave the room like, oh my God, I don't know anything about this, which forces you to then address the holes in your plans, or, you know. So I think investing in your time and educating yourself before you put yourself in the position where you're going to be pitching to people is massively beneficial. Like, just constantly keep talking about the business, because, you know, then you get more questions and tell anyone who'll listen about it.
I'm really go psychopathical, because again, if you get in front of an investor, and we were talking about this earlier on, you get in front of an investor and you aren't prepared. I really spend a lot of time listening to Dan Pena. He's business. Like, I have to go asleep listening to him.
I'm
constantly listening to different strategies in the world of business and different ways of, but a lot of his stuff lays to finances and how you prepare yourself going into meetings, how you act in the meeting, you know, whether you shut the meeting down yourself, whatever you have to do. Like, at the end of the day, if you get the cash to get your business to go, that's what it's about. So if you the reason why I asked you at the very start as well, when you came from the world of working for someone and you go into the world of business, it's like it can be doggy dog.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentally, well, again, I'm speaking for myself here, you physically and mentally have to prepare yourself to get beaten.
Yeah.
Like mentally beaten, mm-hmm. and nobody else is going to back your corner. So it's your preparation and your time. But so again, when you're going to get this investment,
mm-hmm.
how did you feel at the time? Did you think you were ever going to get in around?
Yeah, like I think in the same way that you would be inclined, is like I would over prepare for everything. Like I was always very academic and like high achieving and whatever else, and I think that fared in our favor for this type of thing. Like but Amy is very like we are like yin and yang, which is always a good way to be, I think, as a founding team. But like he's like so good off the cuff, and he, you know, he could definitely wing it and do really well. But then I always found that for me, what works well for me psychologically and just feeling confident going into the room is being extremely over prepared and thinking 100%. Of like absolutely everything and documenting it. So I'll write it down. I won't use notes in the meeting, but I feel I have to have it written down so that it's like logged in my brain. And that's how I did all my study and everything else. And it works for me and I still do it.
World of investment, preparation is key. Absolutely. Like I'd be asking myself the same questions over and over and over. And I'd be trying to pull up questions that are going to come in.
Yeah.
Because especially if you step out of your shoes, because someday you're going to be an investor to a startup.
Yeah.
A different person. You naturally will.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, if you step into their shoes for a second, like if I'm giving someone money, I'm grilling them son of a bitches. And again, if I feel for 1 minute that they're incompetent, or I feel that they're a little bit wavy, or they bolt under a bit of pressure that I may have put them under,
mm-hmm.
They're just simply not getting the money. Mm-hmm. Because I think in the world of business, stuff will happen, and everyone needs to man up and push forward and lead.
Yeah, and I think like it's okay to not be an extroverted type in business. Like in the world of startups, and maybe you see it in property as well, I'd say you definitely do, because I've seen a lot of videos from like UK properties and stuff, and there's a lot of I suppose like show and then kind of nothing, it's all smoke and mirrors. Like that happens in every industry, but I think it's okay to not be a showy type jazz hands person, but to know what you're talking about, and when you're in the room one-on-one to be able to distill all the information that you know about, you know, all the facts, all the figures, to not waffle. You know, I think that stands to you. There's so many times where I've been in a room, whether it's with an investor or with a client, I'm like, oh my God, thank God I researched that.
I was able to spit that
statistic out. Yeah. Or thank God me and Badami went over and back about that role problem. Play. Yeah, for an hour, like earlier. Yeah. Because now, and he'll laugh at me because I'll, or he'll say something that I said earlier verbatim. Like, he, I'm like, that's my line.
Yeah. He'll winking at you in the meeting.
He's like, that's what I said earlier. Yeah. But no, it definitely stands.
You have to get the money, and that, like, whatever. I know a lot of people go, oh, the money is the root of all evilness. Money is the only thing that's going to drive your business forward.
It's, you don't have a business. It's not a charity. Like, you exactly. know, I remember, like, I was on a program called Going for Growth, and it was for women entrepreneurs. And it's the best thing I ever did. The leader of it, her name's Paula Fitzsimons. She said something that I never forget. She said, you have to follow the money.
Yeah.
It's all well and good creating a business, something that, oh, I love this, so I'm going to make a business about this. And,
yeah.
you know, like, is do people want that? Is there a market yeah. for it? Like, how much will they pay for it? Is there, if you sell it for this much, are you making money? Like,
yeah, what's the profit line?
The money, like, and I think especially maybe in, like, for women as well, that tend to veer towards product-based businesses, which was what I've seen through that program. You know, there's a huge amount of businesses that are bricks and mortar and that were product led, that sometimes we're afraid, or if you've got a customer that's right in front of you, if you're doing their nails, or if you're, you know, if you're selling a product, that you might be afraid to up your prices because your costs have
yeah.
increased or whatever it may be. But sometimes there's a thing that it's, you know, not great to talk about money, or
don't keep talking about money. Don't. Yeah, well,
but like you can't, like, the only way you can offer value to your customer or to the person using your app or whatever you're doing is if, like, you're charging sufficiently and you're yeah. if you're creating enough value, then you should be able to charge for yeah. that value. Like, you do, yeah. like with your training, like, you're giving value to people that then go on and whatever they invested make, you know,
yeah.
Multiples of what they spent on that education, you know. So
it's definitely, and again, like, about getting behind your brand again and knowing that, okay, if we charge $2,000 for training, right, which I think is really, really low compared to what I paid.
Yeah.
But again, when I look into my book and I look into my training, and, you know, someone upstairs may say, yeah, it's $2,000. I'm like, it's fucking too cheap. I know it's in there.
Yeah.
And for them 40, 50 euro notes that they're going to give me for that, it should be like 600 of them notes, because you put your heart and soul into it. And I think, if you're in a company like yours too, and everyone has that mindset behind it, that, like, we've got this thing here and it's worth more, you know, they're going to throw the receipt in the bin anyway.
Yeah.
So you might as well take some money back and make it a win-win.
But, like, it's like when you go see a consultant, you know, about something that's wrong with you, and no one else knows what's wrong with it, only that consultant, like, you know, your body, like, it's going to be 180 quid for, and it might, yeah. you might be only in the room for 8 minutes or something, yeah. you know, but you're not paying for 8 minutes. You're paying for all the training that came before. Just like when someone comes to you,
yeah.
you're paying for all your years experience in the industry and, you know, and all the hours that you put into creating the materials and all, you know, Ozzy being involved and Tara yeah. and everyone's time that's involved in that. And the years that came before that, so that you could distill that information.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's, as entrepreneurs, it's very important to put a value on that, because people will actually pay it, because yeah. like, you know, if you, I think you said in one of the trainings before, like, you know, if you get a yes too easy, then you've priced it too low. I can't remember exactly yeah, what so the context was.
Again, if we're in the middle of a property deal.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, so I'll put this in real proper terms.
Yeah.
So we got a lead in from Galway. Went down
yeah.
on Saturday. We decided we'd make a night of it. Me and Tara went over to the Aran Islands, went in, viewed the properties, got out, rang them, had a chat with them, went for a coffee,
yeah.
sat down, and started just going too easy. And then we made him an offer. He said no. 10 minutes later, he said yeah.
Okay.
I'm like, now I'm like, what the fuck? Hang on a minute. This is the shit I tell people to be careful about.
Mm.
But it's not. Mm. We like completely went overkill to check the due diligence of it then. But again, if it's too easy,
mm-hmm.
you have to stop and go to yourself, okay, why is this a fast yes?
Yeah.
And you have to try and figure out all the avenues then again of the reason why it is a fast
yeah.
Yes. But, like, I mean, some people are just, especially in my business, it's you know, we our calling card is fast. So I buy property fast, yeah. not slow. So if you're going to, if I'm going to buy something off you fast, you better be prepared to take a little discount.
Yes.
You're going to be taking a little haircut.
Yeah.
And it makes it win-win.
Yeah. And you're, you know, you went through that with us as well on the training, is like understanding the person in front of you, like, and that applies to any, like my business, your business, yeah, and property. And like, if you know, if you've taken, instead of you coming into a room, like, you know, because it's all sales, everything is, yeah, sales, coming into the room and speaking at someone saying, I can do this and I can offer you that and whatever, like, you, I know that you go into the room and you don't say anything,
you listen
and you let them keep talking and talking, so that you know who's in front of you.
You've and listened, their you've listened to me very, very well.
No, but it makes sense
in any business as well. I think it's the most, if you are the one with the education, you're just looking for these little small things, and if you can make a win-win, great. I mean, that's how good businesses go. But I think, so who would be the closer then in your business? Who would be the, let's say, okay.
Mm-hmm.
two questions.
Yeah.
How did you feel when you actually got the investment?
Yeah.
Big one done. And then who would have been the person in the company? Well, it's you and Bademi, and I know you have a staff underneath you then. Mm-hmm. Well, who would the one have looked at each other and say, let's go? Who is it, you or is it him? Who's the closer of the business?
I would say, in terms of clients, we both work with clients. But in terms of when we were raising investment, I'd say Bademi is our hard negotiator.
Okay.
He would testify that with his background and everything, and he grew up, like, he'd be okay with me saying this, but like, he grew up in a disadvantaged area, you know, and
he knows how to hustle,
and if you didn't hustle, you wouldn't make it, you know, in the playground or in wherever you were. So
you'd be dead.
Yeah. well, that's true as well. Yeah. And you could definitely tell stories about that. But he would definitely drive a hard bargain, I would say.
Right. So if you were going to target the UK, that's gonna require, I can only imagine, right, just from listening to your story so far, that's going to require, because it's going to bring much bigger profits for you too, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's going to require you and Bademi really working hard, and then getting back out to the markets, trying to find another investor, trying to raise maybe a couple of million.
Yeah.
For Brian Center.
Yeah, definitely a couple of million. Yeah. Like, we haven't opened a funding round yet, but it would probably be around 2 million
that we're going
to raise, yeah,
to tackle in there. Okay, so that's a big, big investment.
Yeah.
And that obviously comes. So you two guys would look at each other and say, this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Who sets out the roadmap for that? Like,
we would always do that together, like, very, very, I don't know how you'd say it, like pen and paper style, as in like whiteboard, write out, you know, what our plans are, how, like what our revenue projections will be, you know, the number of brands that we need to onboard, how much staff do we need in order to be able to work with that number of brands, just literally the I suppose the targets, and then working backwards from them. Lots of Excel spreadsheets. We would do all of that together. Workshop style. I think, like, you probably would do that as well.
We whiteboards everywhere.
Yeah.
This whole building, every room you walk into, it there's whiteboard. We do the exact same in the investment world. You go right to the end, you work your way back, and you're like, and if you've been down there before, I've just raised 2 million. It's like severely is like, you're like a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
And I did say it to you earlier on, I've had to say no to smaller amounts of money. And you know, when you say no to small. So when we talk about winging it in business a little bit, you're looking at the bigger picture saying, I need to get that to get this to work.
Yeah.
But again, I'm going to have to say no to maybe 4 or 5 small. And you know, they're not going to come back. They're going to be rightly pissed off. But you have to sort of back yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to try and go for it again. But like, raising big money is stressful.
It is. And I think, like, throughout, I think it's important to, like you would do, is to build relationships throughout the process of running the business. So, like, not to only knock on people's doors when you need money or when you need something. But to let them know like that they, how the business is going, and you know that they'd have a vested interest in you know in wanting updates. They just think you're a good team. Like they like you as people, and they like the business that you're trying to build. Like that's always been how we've approached things and maintaining relationships with people. Because it's all people, you know,
100%
in business. Yeah,
all relationship building.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's a good point as well. I'm so again. If you have decided that you're doing this, have you decided you're doing this for a certain second round?
Yeah, like that to grow internationally, we would need to raise more funding for sure. Just to establish ourselves in terms of like having built, you know, a substantial user base that can drive results for brands now that we will continue to build on. But also to build, you know, a reputation for ourselves in the UK. We'd be starting from, you know, we have some brand recognition in the UK. We've influencers who are interested. Yeah. They're asking us if are you in the UK yet, and that's great to hear. But yeah, we would need to build out our base of shoppers.
And it's probably the same mentality as I have as well with raising funds. If you're looking for it for tomorrow, you're not gonna get it. You start talking about that shit now with 6 months.
Yeah.
Me. Oh, well, all in all, I think probably, not that I went for a kill at start, but probably to raise the 2 million probably took me 2 years mentally, because there wasn't too many other people that wanted to do this.
How did you get to that then?
To raise it?
Yeah, like as in, I suppose mentally, but also like, had you 2 years before, had you got enough people in your network, or did over those 2 years did you build up more people?
So we trialed and tested a few times, and then I smaller bits worked, and then we got offers of like say $500,000.
Okay.
And I was like, well, $500,000 isn't gonna buy me much.
Yeah,
you know, it's not gonna buy me 10 houses, and you need a flow of houses.
Mm-hmm.
So I told you there today, we picked up a new set of keys again today.
Yeah.
It's not even used to get a great buzz out of it. Now I'm like, just grab the keys, and it's a system now again. It's a little bit, I don't know, a little bit clinical now. Yeah, I'm not getting as much fun out as I did. But so we trialed it and tested it. We've done a couple of little small raises. But again, it's all relationship building. So when you see me putting stuff into groups, and you see me advertising there online or late nights here in the office chopping up videos, there was one goal in mind, and only that was 2 million.
Yeah.
And then our 2 million that we raised, we told our investors, which, you know, I told them very clearly, you know, this, I'm going to stack this thing out, which I think there's maybe a couple of hundred grand still left in the pot. So, but that's our targets aren't met.
Yeah.
So I was like, your job's to go and get me more money, or you're out of town. I'll do the rest over this side.
Yeah.
You go and get me money, or you're no good to me.
Okay.
So I have a mantra when it comes to investors now.
Yeah.
I interview them.
Yes.
And they're my terms. And I think for anyone that's trying to raise money, or maybe for yourselves going for the big kill, be very, very mindful that you're putting all this work in.
Absolutely.
You're the one that's, you know, you and Badem, you have to essentially live with all the stress. Investor, again, you don't go around, like, I most certainly don't go around with a begging bowl.
No.
I'm like, there's a couple of you guys and there's one of me.
Yeah.
So I literally interview them to see, can I work with them? Because it's definitely not going to be all plain sailing.
No.
There's going to be a couple of them that you might have to bring back some bad news.
Yeah.
On that one as well, I was telling you today, we were trying to return money to an investor. He's like, keep it. And I was like, no, you're taking it back. And he's like, I don't need it back.
Yeah.
Deal's a deal. Come back to me in 6 months. So in the world of property, it's probably a lot different to your investment.
Yeah, but it's the same concept as you said. Like, it's like you're not going out with a begging bowl. You're not begging for money. Like, you're given, for us, we're given equity in the company that we've built, and that we, you know, blood, sweat and tears, and you know, all the rest of it. So and intellectual property and everything else. So like, you're offering a slice of something that's really valuable, you know, that there's only a limited number of people who can invest in it. We can't, you know, sometimes you hear of funding rounds in startup worlds that are oversubscribed, like that they got more investors than they initially, or more money raised than they initially set out to do. And you know, like once the round is filled, it's not always beneficial to take more funding in at that yeah. point, because you say you have your 2 million, it's obviously a great position to be in, but say you have your 2 million and you're giving it for whatever percentage of the company you're giving it for. If you raise more than 2 million, obviously you're giving more slices of the company away at a potentially lower valuation. So if you need 2 million to do what you need to do to get to your Series A fundraising or your Series B fundraising, taking 3 million on at this point, when you have a lower valuation, means you're giving away more chunk of your company
yeah.
when it's not as valuable. So you want to take as little money as you possibly can to get it to the next stage before you take more money
yeah.
and so on and so forth, so that you as founders obviously still have a decent portion of your company. Like you hear about startups as well where the founders get so diluted that their shares are, you know, in the single digits.
Yeah.
And the motivation to depend on what clauses you have, the legals like would
thin
you in circles, but depends on what clauses that the investors have in there, you might not stand to gain very much, even if the company does sell for a large sum of money. So keeping the founders motivated is really important by making sure you still have enough skin in the game that, you know, that you're, that it, when all does go to plan and you do IPO or whatever the plan is for the company, that you're going to.
Do you think you will do IPO? Think you will?
That would be amazing. I would never rule anything out. Or, you know, like.
So Dan Pena said to me, if you go.
Yeah.
I go back through his talks all the time. He took.
Yeah.
He knows when he made his first 10 books, as he calls it, 100 books.
Yeah.
He knows in one day when he made 10,000, when he took his company public.
Yeah.
He like that. That check was like 100 million that day.
God.
So. Yeah. But I know. I get caught into some podcasts with certain people with that took companies public.
Yeah.
And like they've nearly come to the gates of hell trying to do it. Like really difficult to do.
It's not necessarily the answer for every company at all. And like, you know, strategic acquisitions by strategic investors and by parties that stand to gain from acquiring a company like yours, or you know, in a large incumbent company that, you know, never could have built internally what you guys have built, but needs that asset in their portfolio or in their business because it benefits their other businesses or whatever it may be. You're looking for opportunities within, like, say, companies or organizations where what you've built in a ready-made pack can be part of something bigger. And that's what I see happen a lot in startups, is they become a slice of something larger.
Yeah.
And their team stays there for a period of time so that everything can integrate. That's why building the relationships as you go, and not just like I want to sell today.
Relationships are the new currency.
There's no
denying that. Again, just going back to when you actually did get the investment, did you actually look at each other and go, fuck, this is serious, we have something.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to give you that amount of money if you have nothing.
No, it was massive validation for sure. And completely new feeling to us. I was so unwell during the process at different points.
You could write yourself a few tablets, you'd be all right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You definitely have to look after your mental health and like, I suppose just having everything in order. Now because of that experience, I'm very organized with all, like, you know, with due diligence, I have everything in folders. And like, if I was asked for anything, I have it ready. Like that kind of stuff just simplifies and reduces things down. But yeah, in terms of how we felt, it was a bit surreal kind of. But at the same time, because it did take much longer than we expected, like we were like, you know, all clear. Now we can plow ahead. It was just, like you said, kind of had to be like, right, let's go. You know,
and you get the money, and then you realize we actually now have to go. We were all this big fight. Now we have to run.
Yeah, we've made a lot of promises, so we have to deliver. Yeah.
Congratulations! As I said, everyone should be now downloading
promotional
rewards. How else can they get to you if they like? Yeah. Do you have another channel? Is there other?
Yeah.
Let's just say it's me again. That's stupid. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna download this tonight, but I still don't. Like, is there places people can see how to use the app? And
we're really active on our social channels, and that's kind of how we've grown to date. Is So it's use promotion, so USE promotion, on all our social channels. So TikTok especially, you might see me acting the maggot.
On, why not?
Look, if it gets people to download the app, I don't know, I don't really mind. That's kind of where you'd find us. And then if you work with a consumer good brand, any brands that are in supermarkets or pharmacies, or if you own a chain of restaurants or whatever, and you'd like to get in touch with us about how you could drive new people to buy your products or go to your restaurant or whatever it is, get in touch with me and I'll see how we can help you and what we can do to help grow your brand.
And
you
know? I'm just jogging my memory back to actually our group that you're in.
Yeah,
we have got very, very successful. Obviously wouldn't be naming any names, but again, relationships.
Yeah.
He's a very, very successful angel investor.
Okay.
And he's into property too, obviously.
Yeah,
but his gig is finding companies that need his help.
Yeah.
Scalability help. And what he's really, really good at doing is identifying these companies and then putting the right funding in behind them and getting them to grow.
Yeah.
So over your last, we'll probably wind down with this one.
Yeah.
Have you any regrets? Anything that you would maybe look back at, learn and turn and say, well, you know, over the last 3 years, well, I wouldn't worry about that again, or I wouldn't worry about this again, or maybe I would have done this now faster. Whatever you're going to do with the UK stuff, it's going to be much quicker than, you know, your last fundraise.
Yeah. I would say, like, more on a personal level, to be less serious, like, as in not less serious, but maybe to
play around on TikTok a bit more.
No, I think, like, to just kind of look up for a second and realize that you're, like, what you're doing well. And, like, also the thing that I maybe alluded to earlier with the spoken mirrors is that, like, there's a lot of companies out there that put on a good show, or, like, you know, people that talk a good talk that might be startup founders. You might be comparing yourself, whether it's in property or whether it's in startup land.
We get them all the time as well.
Like, you know, keep your blinkers on, and sometimes people will come along as well with, you know, you get a ton of advice, and some of it is so helpful, but others of it would be, you know, obviously they might have only heard about your business 10 minutes ago and they're in a position where they might be mentoring you or whatever, but to take things on board, obviously, and listen to people and all the rest of it, but just to kind of remember that maybe that because you've invested so much time in your business, to go with what you know as well, and to trust your gut instinct too. Like that, just because somebody's maybe in a higher position, perceived position of power, or has 20 years experience in something, nobody knows your business like you do. So take what they've said and listen to it and see where it might apply, but also be okay with discarding some advice.
Yeah.
If I only heard about a business 10 minutes ago, I couldn't give really good advice either. So just kind of owning what you've, the work that you've done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And standing fully over it.
Yeah.
For some young, because I know women entrepreneurs are like assassins, cannot get enough of them in here. Like, I'm like, come on. Normally what happens now, what we do is like, okay, your partner can come too.
Yeah. Okay. I'm
constantly try to do that, because I know once the woman, and I put a post into our WhatsApp group today about men and women in business together.
Yeah, I saw that actually. Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
So, because, like, my past people I would have been in business would say, oh, we don't tell our wives this, and we don't tell, it's property, she doesn't need to know this, or he doesn't need to know that.
Yeah.
Plenty of women. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, business for me is something that we talk about every single day. And I think we're tired as her, I stay in my lane, she stays in her lane, and we do quite well. So, I mean, I think relationships, if they're solid and both partners are in there, and there's both given a bit of go, even if one of them is a little bit lesser than the other one, or a little bit shyer, I think it's fantastic for couples to be in business together.
Definitely.
It fills out a lot of time.
Absolutely. And, like, I think in the video as well that it said about, like, being aligned on your financial goals, like that, like, I don't have a statistic, but I would imagine a lot of reasons for a divorce is, a lot of it comes down to money, and a lot of problems in life comes down to money. So if you're both on the same page about, you know, what your goals are in terms of, you know, working, retiring, you know, talking about that even early is like, is so important. And especially before like marriage or like any of that, you know, to kind of know that you're on the same page, I think is so important. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, look, it was fantastic to get you in. I am going to do part two with Bademi because I know I can shake a lot of tricks out of his pocket. He's probably going to be listening back to this as well. So it's a fantastic interview. Delighted to have you in to actually not talk about property tonight, but actually discover what exactly you do. Is there anything else you want to get out on the Platinum airwaves before we wrap up? Is there any other little promotional things? There's any giveaways or
if you download the app and use the code Lauren, you get 1,000 points to start with.
Okay.
Or maybe I should say Platinum.
I don't mind.
Use code Platinum and we'll do that.
I'll be downloading my 1,000.
Yeah, 1,000. We'll use code Platinum and you get 1,000 points. If you come to me as a brand, you know, as someone who's trying to grow a brand, and you mentioned that you found us through Platinum Property, we'll definitely make sure that we give you added value. Brilliant. For sure.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah, we love being part of the network, and it's been fantastic. And definitely, if you're thinking about training in property, Platinum are 100% the way to go. I've learned so much, and I haven't started my property investing journey yet, but it's something that I'm really interested in. I think like as a woman and as an entrepreneur, that it's really good to think about, you know, your own financial future, and Platinum is a really safe and empowering place to explore that, no matter what stage of the journey you're at. So
I definitely, and there's a lot of business owners as well, but like the trend that I always see is we've got a lot of business owners in as well that have really good businesses, and then they put their money into property. And I think that's the, I won't say new upcoming, because it's around years, but it's great because I get to listen to their companies too, because I'm really interested in companies.
Yeah.
If I'm not buying and selling the house, I might be buying and selling the company.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, it was a great interview, and chat soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
No problem.